ring if you're ready to care. Let the podcast begin. Oh, let's talk power, let's talk speed. Hosted by the one and only We Too Deep. Turn it up loud, feel the power in your seat. This is Slappin' Neat, yeah, Slappin' Neat.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep, and this is the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. We got a big weekend of wrestling. We got All In. We got Great American Bash. We got Saturday Night's Main Event. And we got the All-Women's PLE Evolution Round number two, and we're going to talk about almost all of it, because we'll just start off by saying I could honestly give two camel ankles of care about Saturday night's main event. I don't even know the card. I know Gunther and Goldberg are fighting, and that's literally what this was built around, was Goldberg's last match, Goldberg versus Gunther. If Goldberg wins the title, or even wins at all, it doesn't even have to be for the title, but if Goldberg wins this match, I will absolutely lose my mind. So that's all we're going to talk about Saturday night's main event for, but we're going to do our predictions for the other three shows here tonight, or today, whenever you're listening to it, as you're listening to this podcast. Just some housekeeping, as you surely have found out already. If you are listening on the YouTube, there is no video. And this is from this point forward, from this episode on forward, as I stated, I'm going to mainly focus on posting solely on the audio platforms. One, most people, from what I have gathered from how people just in general, not just people who listen to this show, but just people in general, when they listen to podcasts, most of them are in the car, or, you know, it's, I wouldn't want to say background noise, but most people aren't watching the video, right? And so, for me personally, it's not a lot of work to set up the video, but it's a lot of money, right? Because I had to pay $9.99 a month for the service that I was using to do the video, and they have a free plan, right? But you could only do 4 hours a month or something like that of recording, and y'all know me, I do 4 hours and two episodes. So you pay for the unlimited amount of recording and all of that stuff. And to me, that price, because I'm not bringing anything in, I'm losing money on that deal. And if people don't necessarily, especially the people who watch the show, if they don't necessarily care about seeing my face, they just want to hear what I got to say, well, then I'm just going to go back to doing how I started this, which is just having it be audio, no video, and we'll post it. Luckily, the audio site, or the RSS.com that I use, which I highly recommend if you're going to start a podcast, you host through them. Right, I know things like Spotify, Spotify for podcasters, what used to be known as Anchor, you could use them as well. I don't necessarily, I didn't like them when I used them. I liked RSS a little bit better. RSS did a little bit more in terms of, you know, in my opinion, getting it out to more platforms. Whereas Spotify, being that Spotify owns it, they're not going to help you get it out to Apple. You're going to have to do all that work by yourself. And it's not hard, but anyway, this is not an ad for that. I'm just rambling. Y'all know me. So we're going to do our predictions on this episode. And then in doing so, we'll break down what I think is going to happen on these shows. But before we get there, there's a lot of news to cover from the last week of wrestling, right? So before we dive into the news, though, like, share, subscribe, follow, share the links, tell everybody about this podcast. Let's grow this community. Join the Discord. This is a reminder for everyone who's listening. If you haven't given me all three shows predictions, for those who are in the Discord participating in the prediction competition, if you haven't given me all three shows predictions, those are due by noon Saturday afternoon before the shows start. And so, you know, I would highly recommend, even if you don't watch AEW, get in those predictions. Remember, you have to be at 50% of matches predicted in order to have your percentage counted, right? So I would hate for someone to win or have the highest percentage of correct picks, but only predict 40% of the matches and then not win, right? And there's not a prize. It's just, but you know, we are going to have these type of rules and have a little bit of fun with it. And that's the fun of it. Like, I don't watch AEW, but I'm going to sit here and make predictions based on what I think could happen and what I think will happen, right? That's the fun of predictions to me, right? So that's just that reminder. But let's dive in to, first off, my opening thoughts, and then we'll do the news, because there's a lot of news, right, that I want to talk about. So first, and I guess all of this is technically news, so we'll just consider all of these opening thoughts. That's the news segment, right? We're talking about Evolution. It's this Sunday, and I think it's a groundbreaking event. I don't want to say historical, because the first one I would say would be historical, because that was the first one, right? But to do this now almost, what is it, like seven, eight years later, to have another one, I think this one will be a better event, because the women's game, the women's, literally the evolution of the women, of women's wrestling, has finally sort of, you know, hit like a place where I believe there are women's wrestlers right now. So let me sort of explain, right? The first one was like 2017, 2018, right? Around that time, the independent scene for women's wrestling was absolutely booming, right? And WWE at that time was in a progress. They were doing the Mae Young Classic. They were definitely scouting through NXT with Triple H and Stephanie, definitely scouting a lot of these indie women to come to the company, right? And this is, well, right around the time we got the Rhea's and the Dakota Kai's and EO and Asuka and all of these women, right? It was booming, right? I remember, you know, and so for me, when I was getting back into wrestling around 2014, 2015, I knew of WWE, and I had never really understood, like that there was a, for lack of a better term, a developmental system for wrestling known as the independent scene. All I grew up with was WWE. That's what I thought pro wrestling was. And so when I got into it, and Cody, co-host of the Beyond the Junkyard podcast, who did an episode yesterday doing their all-in predictions, go listen to that if you want to. He sort of introduced me to that there were other companies, because he would talk about WCW all the time. And I was like, bro, what the hell is a WCW? Right? And so then he would introduce me, like, at this time, the network, the WWE Network had just come out. And so, you know, I would go over to hang out with him, and we would watch all WCW PLEs or pay-per-views, which is, you know, he showed me what is today. If anyone were to ask me what my favorite match of all time is, I don't like to play favorites, but I give a really, really, really big edge to Eddie Guerrero versus Rey Mysterio, Halloween Havoc 97. I think that might be the greatest match of all time. From a in-ring, like, I don't know. I didn't know the story. He just showed me the damn match, and I was like, bro, this is fantastic. Right? This was a, that was, like, if in terms of in-ring just spectacle, that was my favorite. And there, I haven't found anything that has topped that match. And so I started getting into looking outside of WWE. I was introduced to, like, the indie scene around this time and started watching other women or other wrestlers. And what I found was that the men's indie scene, even today, 90% of men in the independent wrestling scene will never reach WWE. There's a real, I thoroughly believe in the independent scene for men, about 1%, 2%, maybe at most 5% of current males in the independent wrestling are good enough to make it to AEW or WWE. That's thoroughly my opinion. I think if you go over to the women's side, I think that's probably a little bit higher. Now, it's not like 100%. I still think it's probably around 20, 25%. Of women currently in the women's independent scene, I think could make it to an AEW or a WWE. And one of those factors is, at least to me, that made me really gravitate towards the women's indie scene, was I saw a lot more talent, I saw a lot more potential, but I also, at the end of the day, if the match wasn't the most entertaining or the most all-breaking match, like, it could be like a two-star match. At least there was something for me to look at. And I'm sure women, when you watch wrestling, you probably say the same thing about the men, right? At least there's something to look at, right? And so, you know, at this time I was watching Priscilla Kelly, which would future be known as Gigi Dolin, right? So Priscilla Kelly, it's Tessa Blanchard, Avery Taylor, which is now JC Jane, Lindsay Snow, just, you know, Selena De La Renta, which has a new name. I can't remember what it is. I think she works for MLW. Who else was I watching? You know, Savannah Evans, Deanna Purrazzo, right? So a lot of these people, Santana Garrett, right? She was my favorite in 2014, 2015. And so, like, bro, this was fantastic. Like, this was wonderful. This independent scene, what WWE was doing with the first evolution of it. I'm rambling, right? Just to show you that I love women's wrestling. Like, everyone talks about, can we go back to the Divas era? No, we don't need that. I think we've, first off, we've evolved past that. We've evolved to a generation of people like Roxanne Perez, who grew up watching AJ Lee completely dismantle the Divas division, right? And made it about the wrestling. We have a bunch of women now entering that are in their, you know, early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, who they want the athletic competition. And that's, I think, as a fan, what we should want, right? Can we just be honest? The Divas era of wrestling with the brawling panty matches and all of that stuff, it had its place. It doesn't belong in wrestling again. It had its place in time but can we go back? And I've done this on an episode before. Go back and watch the Attitude Era and tell me that it was that you still think it's good. Watch it unbiasedly with open eyes, not with the nostalgic lens of this was when wrestling was at its peak. Watch it for the actual product on the TV, and you'll recognize the Attitude Era was absolutely, for about 90% of it was trash, right? Of course, you got Taker and some other good stuff that came, Austin and Rock and Triple H. And later, you know, as we moved into the Ruthless Aggression era, a lot of more stuff was coming out of it. But 90% of the Attitude Era was absolute trash, right? And so I say all of this because to set up that I like women's wrestling. So the idea of an all-women show is a fantastic idea. But I'm going to be honest. I'm going to give you my opinion. It should have just stayed an idea. And here's why. The reality comes and hits that a majority of casual fans, a large portion. Now, I will say this. I've said this as well. I don't think the casual fan base in WWE is as large as a lot of casual fans and casual podcasters would like to say. They love to say, oh, 70-80% of the audience at the shows are casual. No, I don't think it's that big. But I think there is a larger portion, 15, 20, 25% of the WWE audience that is a little bit more casual, who don't really necessarily want to see women wrestle. And so the news comes out, I think it was an article last week, that the women backstage, the women's roster, is a little bit upset with how Evolution has been treated. Essentially, first off, it's being used as a troll against Tony Khan to create this whole weekend for WWE to counter program AEW. Now, first off, I have zero issue with that. I have zero issue with counter-programming. I will highly suggest WWE continue doing it. If not for anything, so that I can see these fucking marks that love AEW, who get on their microphones and cry and cry and cry about how WWE is being petty. No, they're being businessmen. Welcome to the new age of business. Right, I we're going to talk about this because there's another event that just got announced, and we're going to talk about that at the end of this little segment when we talk about the news and stuff, right? But so I'll give this opinion at that point. But like, welcome to business. Anyway, the roster's upset with the booking and that it's being used as counter programming, and it's being, you know, it's the same weekend in the same weekend and city as Beyonce and the MLB All-Star Game, and that they're pretty much being set up to fail. And while I agree, I do believe this was set up to fail, and I do believe it was set up this way so that Triple H can come out or TKO can come out, and when they never run one of these events again, they can say, well, the last time we did it, we rented State Farm Arena, which had 20,000 seats in it, and we only could sell 4,000 tickets, and they're not going to talk about the fact that you guys literally are charging an arm and a leg to go to this event. At the same time, you're filling the market with a lot of wrestling. So what a lot of people wanted to do, because this is what I wanted to do, right? So a lot of people wanted to go to Great American Bash and go to Evolution. some of them wanted to do the trifecta and do all three events and do Saturday night's main event. And so you were doing Evolution Saturday night's main event combo tickets, but you never comboed in Great American Bash, because Great American Bash you put in a little theater that has like 1,000 seats. If that, you're charging like $500 for an NXT event, which, guys, I love NXT. I don't love it enough to pay $500. And so a lot of people wanted to do all of the events. And that used to be possible price-wise, where it was like, hey, well, we're going to splurge on Evolution, and we're going to go sit in the lower bowl here, pay $200 for that, and for Great American Bash, we'll go sit up, we'll pay like $50 for a ticket, and then for Saturday night's main event, you know, we'll do the same thing, right? And we can go to three events for, you know, $300, $400 a person for all three events. But the pricing from TKO just makes it nearly impossible to do that. And so, yes, I do think Evolution was set up to be the scapegoat for why, I told you the women's, and I'm going to sit here and say, I've said in the past, all women's wrestling shows, like a PLE of all women, will never sell to the mainstream audience. I just don't personally believe women's wrestling will ever come to a point in time where it will be mainstream to watch an all-women's show, right? Which is sad, because I think there's a lot you can do there. But I just don't think there's enough characters. I don't think there's good enough stories in any of the divisions. You would need a really good story writer to do that. I think it's possible that if you get really, you know, really good stories on TV, you could probably put a show up there that would do decent enough ratings. I mean, you'd beat Dynamite or you could probably beat a Dynamite or a Collision every week. But I just don't know if it'll be a consistent like 1 million, 2 million, 3 million type viewership. And so I thoroughly agree. However, if you're a woman in that locker room this weekend and you're frustrated, use that frustration and put on the best fucking show of the weekend. You're the last one to go on. Put on the best fucking show of the weekend. Please. Right? Because we're going to start this weekend with Great American Bash. And it's actually on at the same time as All In, but we're going to start with All In and Great American Bash. And All In's going to absolutely obliterate Great American Bash. I'm not afraid to say that. They're going to have more viewers. More people are going to watch that live, because Great American Bash will be... I'm going to be at work on tomorrow, so I'm not going to watch anything live on Saturday, right? And so I'm going to come home. I'm going to, you know, take a shower. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to turn on Great American Bash, and that's what I'm going to watch Saturday night, because I don't care about Saturday night's main event. I really don't. All I care about is Gunther winning, and I'm pretty certain, I'm 99.9999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 matches I care about because I don't even know what else is happening. But, so I'm going to watch Great American Bash tomorrow night. But then, Sunday, by yourself, all the world watching, the women, all the wrestling world is going to do Sunday night is watch the women. Now, are you going to get the casual fan to leave watching the All-Star game? Probably not. Did people go to Beyonce instead of watching the women's wrestling? Probably. Take your frustration. The booking has not been good. You've got 2 week storylines. You got a 1 week storyline, basically. You know, this Trish Tiffany story doesn't have a lot of story to it, right? You got some really weak storylines. But here's what I need you to do. Go out there and put on the best fucking show of the weekend. Because I know this roster. I know this card can do it. This shot of motivation. You should be frustrated, absolutely, because you guys are the scapegoat. But this should motivate you to put on the best show of the weekend. Don't worry about star ratings, because Dave Meltzer's not giving out 7 stars except to Ospreay. Don't worry about stars. All of Dave Meltzer's stars will be expended during All In. Don't worry about stars. Just go out there and put on the best wrestling show of the weekend. And I believe they could do it. The second thing that I want to talk about is El Grande Americano. Look, I had fun with it for like the first week, first 2 weeks, first 3 weeks. Like the idea is fun. It's now starting to reach that level of this is absolutely retarded. I'm just going to say it is retarded, right? I really am frustrated with how this thing should have been like a month at the longest, where you had El Grande Americano demasked, discovered to be Chad Gable, and it should have been something that put over someone like a Phoenix or a Penta, which I guess kind of happened, right? But this should not have been a multiple month type gimmick. This probably should have ended at Worlds Collide, where a Grande Americano gets demasked. It would have made a lot more sense for El Grande Americano to fight Vikingo rather than Chad Gable, and then Vikingo demask El Grande Americano, and then have Chad Gable in the Money in the Bank. That would have probably made a little bit more sense. But yeah, I'm over it. And now we've sort of wasted the Creeds. Everything that the Creeds were in NXT has been stripped away from them. You're wasting the Creeds. You're wasting Otis. You're wasting Tozawa. You're wasting Gable. Now you're putting Kaiser in this. Guys, I know you all want to live and be like, but we don't know it's Kaiser, it's El Grande. Guys, we gotta be living in reality. Like, we all know what's going on here, right? And I'm typically the guy that's like, hey, stay within kayfabe. And cool, if you want to have fun with it and watch the show and that's what you want, that's fine. But I'm going to get out of that bubble for a minute and say, this gimmick is so boring, it's so stupid. Not only Gable, but now the Creeds and Kaiser are being wasted for this stupid gimmick. Right? It's gone on too long, right? But I wanna sort of force this onto you guys. By pointing you back to what we could have had with Chad Gable. Because this isn't just El Grande Americano that I have a problem with. This has been Chad Gable's booking ever since the Wyatt 6 returned. This is why I was so upset with how the Wyatt 6 debuted or returned, and Chad Gable was the one inserted to be the first victim, right? Because that stalled the momentum of what possibly was one of the greater mid-card stories that WWE was telling and had told for a while. Between Chad Gable, Otis, Tozawa, Maxine. You were getting Maxine over. You were getting Tozawa over. You were getting Otis over. Chad Gable was getting, right, was getting on. He was on the precipice of finally getting a singles championship. And instead, you continue to have Sami Zayn be champion. Never giving the belt to Gable, allowing him to have the big run through the spring and the summer, ending at SummerSlam where Otis would have gone over. Instead of doing that and then having Chad Gable and Otis feud probably throughout the rest of the summer into the fall. You could have brought the Creeds in with Gable at this point. You could have run, you know, you could have called up, you know, the Chase U guys, Riley Osborne and Duke Hudson. Instead of releasing them, you could have then called them up to join Otis in the Alpha Academy. And then you could have done Alpha Academy versus American Made in like a War Game style match. And that could have been your big feud for that was 2023. But we sacrificed all of that. We sacrificed all of that for the Wyatts. And in the process, over the last year and a half, almost 2 years now, you've had Chad Gable being doing literally nothing. You've ruined Otis. You've ruined any hope that Otis would be anything, right? I don't. He's over, but I don't think you had the moment. You have to pull the trigger. Now you got Gable running around in a mask. He's being Shorty G basically all over again. And so, at some point, you have to start asking the questions like, why are we doing this? Like, why? Like, this is why I was so upset when the Wyatt Six came back. Not because I hate the Wyatt Six. I love everyone in the Wyatt Six. Joe Gacy was one of my favorite people when he was in NXT. Joe Gacy's Def Rebel theme song is, I think, the best thing Def Rebel has ever made. It is one of the more listenable theme songs. His NXT theme song. Go back and listen to it. It's one of the more listenable theme songs that we had in WWE. I put it in my pop punk rock playlist that I have, right? That I listen to on occasion, and it came on and it fits the vibe of the playlist. You don't have to say, oh, this is WWE. Oh, it's more of who made this song, right? It's one of the more listenable theme songs. Right? And there's just so much that around this time period, Joe Gacy's group gets broken up and Grizzled Young Veterans left. I forgot the name of the, was it Schism? The Schism broke up and Grizzled Young Veterans left and all of that. That's right. And they could have been caught up as well. And Schism would have worked on the main roster. They could have been this Wyatt Six type gimmick. Without the creepy Bray, like, without having to continue this Bray Wyatt stuff that, what is it, the fourth time they've tried this? Three times with Bray, or one time now again with the Wyatt Six, and it still hasn't gone over? Right? I hate to break it to you. I love a good story. But you can't, when you watch a horror movie, right? Horror movies aren't known for the plot. Right, the idea of a horror thriller movie is, it's psychological. It's not to tell you a good story. It's to the thrill of going to a horror movie or watching a thriller is getting the adrenaline of being on edge and not knowing when the next jump scare. Like, right, that's all that genre of movie is for. And so maybe that's why I'm not a fan of it. But also, it's just not. This isn't good thriller production, right? I don't think there is a lot of good horror movies made anymore. It's not my genre, so I don't know. But from what I've heard from people is the quality of horror movies have gone down. But here's the thing. Here's the reason why I don't watch horror movies, because I'm a storyline person. Outside of the fact that I don't deal with the demonic, I just don't. Anything that has anything to do with demonism and demonic and Satanism and all that, I don't mess with it. I don't come anywhere near it, not at all, right? Outside of that, I'm a story person, right? And so there's no story in a lot of these movies. And so that's that thing, right? I'm just so annoyed with there. Kaiser was 6 months ago was on the precipice of being IC champion, and now we got him in a mask. Right, and let me tell you where this is going to lead. And part of me feels like Chad Gable's not actually hurt, but this was part of the plan. What this is going to lead into is Kaiser's now behind the mask. Gable's going to be cleared, and he's going to come back, and he's going to be behind the mask. They're going to run into each other, and we're going to be like, It's going to be El Grande Americano versus El Grande Americano, probably at SummerSlam. And I'm telling you, that's probably where this is going. And so, yeah. And so that's that. We can get into the more newsworthy stuff to talk about. There was a report last week that Britt Baker is actively, that's the word, actively, meaning she's pressed on getting out, right? She's actively looking to leave AEW. People are saying this is false, but it's the same cast of characters that say everybody, every other story is false. And so we, you know, I 100% believe Britt wants out. Apparently her contract's not up to the end of 27. And so she's got about two more years left in Guantanamo Bay. And so, yeah, good luck to her. I think Tony should just release her. Like, if you don't have any plans for it, he said on, like, the media call, I was listening to Cody say this yesterday on Beyond the Junkyard podcast, that Tony said on the media call that, you know, the women's division, he sort of uses it like sports. And so, you know, you have your starters, and then we run on a rotation or like line changes, where, you know, we're using a certain cast of women now, and we're going to rotate, and when it's Britt's turn, we'll put her back on TV. Guys, Britt's not going to settle for that bullshit. Tony, just release her. Right? Part of me hopes she shows up in this battle royal. But I don't think it's going to happen. But yeah. So Britt Baker will be WWE eventually. It's just when Tony Khan decides to finally release her, and this is a big pillar, right? So two pillars of the founding of your company will be WWE, Cody and Britt. You mentioned that you bring over Jade, you bring over someone like a Ricky Starks, so your future. AEW's lost. So when AEW started, right, Cody was sort of the biggest name there. Of course, you had Jericho, but Cody's your big name pillar. Britt Baker was the pillar of your women's division, but she was also like the future of women's wrestling, right? And then you had, like, Jade was the future of the company. Ricky Saints or Starks was the future of your company. Was he the best? Were they the best? No, but, you know, you could have trained him a little bit. And that's something Ricky Saints went on and talked about on a podcast earlier this week, that, you know, he feels like he's a diamond who just needs a little bit of shining, right? And Tony Khan wasn't shining, right? He was putting him out there to fail. And so, Britt, come on over. Another newsworthy thing, I guess, is last week's episode of Dynamite was episode 300. I don't think this is as historic as everyone thinks it is, you know, on AEW. When you have money, like the cons have, and you have contacts, and you have... let me tell you where the Young Bucks and Omega and Cody, when they started All Elite Wrestling, where they really were smart. They waited until they were at the peak of their popularity, right? When this started, everything came together and the Young Bucks and the Bullet Club and Cody and all of this was really getting at the peak. There was a desperate need for something other than WWE. And so AEW came in, they found a money mark in Tony Khan to basically finance it and run it, and they did their thing, right? And I'm not trying to, like, diss them, but .300 episodes was kind of expected, right? Oh, and the people come back and be like, well, their first TV deal was only for a year. Yeah, but it was at the peak of your company. You were hitting a million multiple times in that first year. You were going to get a second deal. But I also believe, this is my belief, I have no proof, but I do believe Tony Khan was paying for production out of his own pocket without being reimbursed. And I think Tony Khan was going to do whatever it took to keep this thing on TV. I think 300 episodes was expected, right? And everyone's like, well, you're changing the goalpost. No, I'm not changing the goalposts. I just don't think that celebrating 300 episodes of a TV show that maybe isn't the great, right? And they're like, oh, we surpassed Friends. Well, bruh, Friends records 8 episodes a year, 10 episodes a year, right? You're doing 52 episodes a year. Of course you're going to surpass Friends, right? Of course you're going to surpass modern streaming shows that do 8 episode seasons and then take 2 years off filming the next 8 episodes, right? I just don't think it's as historic as the AEW fans want to make this out to be. Charlotte goes on a podcast and was talking about this Tiffany Stratton WrestleMania situation. I want to find this. The actual quote. From Charlotte. I want to read it right here. She went, or this is via Players Tribune, excuse me, which I think is like a blog or something, right? And the quote is this: "It rocked me legit. I'm not too proud to tell you that. My reaction to that line was as genuine as it gets. In my head, Charlotte hasn't been divorced. So I wasn't expecting it to come up in that promo." Via Players Tribune. Guys, this is what I was talking about. When I got all that flack for being Team Charlotte during WrestleMania, when Tiffany Stratton, and I was like, oh, I was like, Tiffany Stratton was highly unprofessional. And everyone came at me and said, "No, bro. Charlotte attacked first, and if she was trying to bully Tiffany, and Tiffany just popped her right back in the mouth." No, that's not what happened. This definitely confirms what I thought happened. Charlotte Flair returned, was told, "You're going to be a heel. You're going to win Royal Rumble," with the goal of getting Tiffany Stratton over as hell. "Here's what we need you to do. We need you to come in and make Tiffany Stratton get sympathy with the crowd." So what does Charlotte Flair do? She does her job. She gets Tiffany sympathy. And Tiffany, not experienced enough to understand character work and what Charlotte's goal was, she comes out and she punches back, completely ruining the narrative being told. If she would have come out and cried and called Charlotte a bully, and how she's not going to, you know, stand up to being bullied, and at WrestleMania, the bully's going down. And then you get your big pop moment, right? That's what WWE wanted. But instead, she goes off script, she goes unprofessional, and Tiffany Stratton ruins the narrative, the story. Tiffany Stratton needs to learn character work. Guys, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm off Tiffany Stratton right now. Right? When she was in NXT, I don't know what changed, but there was direction. There was character work. She came to the main roster. And I don't know what happened. She's just not exciting anymore. But this is why I was saying I was Team Charlotte in this situation. Because I understood what Charlotte was trying to do. And everyone, especially the more casual fan base, was like, nah, bro, if you bully me, I'm going to pop you back. That's what Tiffany did. No. Just admit it. You don't like Charlotte Flair. Because that's what a lot of the hate Charlotte gets stems from, is I don't like Charlotte Flair. Right? Now, I love Charlotte Flair. I think Charlotte Flair possibly is the greatest of all time. There's a battle. I think overall, like, I think Bayley's the greatest of the four horsewomen, and from a wrestling standpoint. But I think as a character, as the mark they left on the business, Charlotte Flair's the GOAT of women's wrestling. Right? Charlotte Flair's the GOAT. And she plays that character very well. And Tiffany Stratton did not play her character. She did not follow the script. And that this continues to prove it. Charlotte was keeping it in character, expecting Tiffany to do the same. And Tiffany didn't keep it in character. Right? Next news report we're doing. 45 minutes on the news. That's crazy. Anyway, Jelly Roll's expected to show up on TV tonight to start a program towards SummerSlam. This got the IWC all up in front. The nerds are mad. They're big mad, bruh. Well, why they got Jelly Roll? Who's Jelly Roll? Why? What about the wrestlers in the back who deserve the moment? But get zero eyes on them, so that's why they're not being used. You know, Jelly Roll's the biggest musical icon in music right now, to the point to where I'm starting to think he's an industry plant. Right? He's not. I know he's not. This dude is genuine can get. I don't know how anyone can hate Jelly Roll. I don't understand how anyone can have hatred for Jelly Roll. His story is highly motivational. And he's going to be paired with a top babyface. They didn't say who. But this itself is enough to make me say, I have to watch SmackDown tonight. If for anything, Jelly Roll. I hope they start with it, because I really don't want to spend all night watching SmackDown. But I think they're going back to 2 hours. Maybe tonight, that's what I heard. So maybe I'll sit here and get a little happy. But yeah, the nerds are big mad. Here's the business. Jelly Roll puts eyes on the product. That's all that matters. Second biggest event in the wrestling business, SummerSlam. There's going to be 14 probably matches that weekend, because there's two nights. Maybe Triple H does 12 because it's not as big as Mania. So maybe he does 6 a night instead of 7. But there's going to be 10 to 12 matches that weekend. Jelly Roll's going to be one of them. He's probably going to be... This match is probably at most going to be a 10-minute match. This overreaction of WWE is going to eventually just be a show of YouTube creators and influencers, and the wrestlers who pay their dues aren't going to get their shot. Y'all overreact over the stupidest shit, bro. He's getting 10 minutes in a match with the entire purpose of bringing the crowd that follow Jelly Roll, for him to promote the show, for him to be in the news, for him to be associated with WWE, to get an audience on SummerSlam. That's all it is. That's all it is. And then the last thing for the news is got the IWC nerds big mad again. Forbidden Door is in August, I believe, the end of August, like August 24th. Well, it's got some competition because WWE has announced that NXT Heatwave will be a PLE event taking place the same day as Forbidden Door. And guys, this is believed it to be, it's about an hour and a half away from my house in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And if it is, your boy We Too Deep will be at Heatwave. Probably in the cheap seats because I can't afford. No, I'm kidding. But these again, co-programming, cross-programming, counter-programming, whatever you want to call it. This isn't a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all. Just because Tony Khan doesn't do it. Because Tony Khan's not in a position to counter-program. WWE's the big dog, right? They make the rules. They set the standard. But like, the example I want to use here is like, okay, I'll put it this way, like, whenever McDonald's builds a new restaurant, right, empty street corner, they find a place where, so I'll use an example, I used to work in North Carolina out in a little place called Midland. It's out in between Charlotte and really nothing. It's literally in the middle of nowhere. It's population like 2,000 people, right? But being that it's on the outskirts of Charlotte, people are moving out there more and more each year. So that they work in Charlotte, but they don't want to live in Charlotte because what happens when you get big population growing at the rate it is, like we're the fastest growing city in America. Is crime comes, housing jacks up, right? And so all these people moving out to the outskirts of Charlotte, right? And so this little road, Albemarle Road, it used to just be a road, like a two-lane road with pretty much nothing there, right? Well, McDonald's built a restaurant on the road, right? And it was pretty much the only restaurant on the road in Midland, right, was McDonald's. Well, guess what's around McDonald's right now? About within 2 years of McDonald's building, a Taco Bell showed up. The Waffle House has been here. Waffle House was the first thing there, but they have Waffle House puts buildings up wherever the fuck they want to put buildings up. Has nothing to do with what I'm trying to say. But Taco Bell's right beside it. Arby's is across the street. Publix is building across the street. Whataburger, the Texas brand, just came to North Carolina. They're putting up a restaurant right across the street from there. I'm pretty sure a Burger King or a Wendy's will pop up next. Well, there's a Wendy's about a mile and a half down the street. The point that I'm trying to say is, when there's competition, you counter your competition, right? So if Burger King builds a restaurant, McDonald's is going to build right across the street from them to steal their customer base. That's how business works. Welcome to business. I don't understand why every single time WWE, like, you don't own August 24th only for Forbidden Door. You don't own that date. Is WWE counter-programming? Probably. But who cares? That's where I'm at. Who cares? Like, why are you letting, put on your show. Especially since Forbidden Door will be on at noon or 1 o'clock start time on the East Coast. It should be over by 4 or 5 o'clock. No one, like, they're not going to put Heatwave on at that point in time. Unless they're going to run a Saturday night's main event or something and run it. But I'm pretty sure the 24th is a Sunday. Pretty certain the 24th is a Sunday. Yeah, it's a Sunday. So they're not going to run any other events that day. They're going to put this on at 8 o'clock so that heat wave is the last thing talked about that day. That's business. And when you're the big dog, you can do that. Actually, Tony Khan, you could do that whenever you want. We have the date we have a date for SummerSlam out if you wanted to counter program that. But you also, we have the date for Survivor Series, November, it's the same weekend every year for Survivor Series. You can counter program that if you want, Tony, but you know why you don't? Because you know no one's going to watch it, right? No one's going to watch your show over Survivor Series. But everyone's complaining about developmental, right? Oh, they're counter-programming. Guys, they're counter-programming All In with with NXT, which is the third brand. They're counter-programming it with Saturday Night's Main Event, which is essentially a televised house show that is literally nothing's going to happen at. And they're counter-programming, but that's not even at the same time as All In. Great American Bash is. So again, that's the third brand, developmental, you know, guys. That's not even main roster. And then they're going to counter-program it the next night with an all-women show. Y'all are scared of the least amount of competition, but Tony Khan for years called out AEW as in competition. He maybe didn't say those words, but the mention of the constant stabbing and poking and prodding of and letting people do promos, cutting down WWE guys, that's competition, right? That's a declaration of a war. And WWE's saying, you know what? TKO saying, you know what? You want war? We'll give it to you. Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam, bam. And right? So I don't see a problem with it. I don't. But so let's go into these predictions. And after the prediction, we're not going to take a lot of time on the predictions. We're just going to, the match, and I'm going to name the winner, right? I'm not going to sit here and explain a lot, I'm just going to be honest. We'll start with All In. And being that I don't know jack shit about All In and what's going on, I'm just going to read the matches and predict my winner, right? We'll start with the newest match that just got added yesterday, because Tony Khan never knows how to stop adding matches. I'm glad I waited till today to predict it. But the main card is only 9 matches this week, or this PLE, which Tony Khan probably finally listened to someone and stopped putting on 14 matches. They're going to go to Forbidden Door and put 14 matches on, but we'll see what happens there. But anyway, the Ops, which is Katsuyori Shibata, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Samoa Joe, will be defending the Trios Championships against the Death Riders made up of Claudio Castagnoli, Wheeler Useless, Wheeler Yuta, and Gabe Kidd, for whatever reason, is now part of this team because I guess everyone else is hurt or something, right? But I'm picking the Ops. This is their first title defense from what I understand. I don't see a reason why they would lose. This probably goes into something with Forbidden Door. So we'll just see, right? The next is a 3-way tag team match between the Hurt Syndicate, which are your current champions, versus Kevin Knight and Speedball Bailey, which apparently are now called Jet Speed because, you know, Kevin Knight's the Jet and Mike Bailey's the Speedball. And so why the fuck not just merge their names together and come up with a stupid name called Jet Speed versus the Patriarchy of Nick Wayne and Chris? Guys, the Hurt Syndicate's winning. MJF is not going to turn right now. Hurt Syndicate is winning. Adam Cole defends the TNT Championship against Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher's winning. This is obvious. Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay versus the Young Bucks. If Ospreay and Swerve lose, they cannot challenge for the AEW World Championship for 1 year. If the Young Bucks lose, they will be stripped of their EVP titles. Well, guess who's not being stripped of their EVP titles? Because the Young Bucks are winning. And this will end up becoming the story for the next year. As you go into All In next year, All In next year will probably be in London. All In next year will probably be in London. Right? And Ospreay will win the title at All In London next year. I think Cody said that idea. I thoroughly agree with that. First off, Witters came up with a wonderful name for, I don't think he meant to do it. But he called him Swerve Spray, and I like that name, Swerve Spray. I think he meant Swerve Ospreay when he typed it, but he didn't put the O, so he called him Swerve Spray, and that's a funny name for this tag team. But anyway, yeah, Swerve and Ospreay, will not be able to challenge for a year. That's what I think will happen. I think Will Ospreay will challenge at All In London next year. And that's when he will finally, you know, I think they're going to build the Ospreay as the big baby face. And I think he wins the title next year. Swerve, they'll find something for Swerve. Swerve does a lot of good work. I'm not going to hate on Swerve. Swerve does good work. Move on up. We got the women's casino gauntlet match. And before I predict a winner, I want to talk about these gauntlet matches. This is the worst idea of a match I've ever heard in my life. Right, so we're going to have an undisclosed amount of people backstage prepared to enter this match. Number one's going to enter. Number two is going to enter. And if they get a submission or a pinfall, no one else can technically enter the match. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen. But it's whoever gets the first pinfall or submission, right, is the win. That's the worst rules ever. It makes zero sense to have 27 people or how many ever you're going to put in this match. Because, one, we don't know how many people are in the match. But then to say, hey, go get ready, go get dressed, but you may not enter. Let's say there's 20 people and you're number 20, there's a really strong chance you're not entering this match. It makes zero sense. If you're going to run a gauntlet match, the whole idea of running a gauntlet is there's 20 people in the gauntlet match. You have to beat 20 people. You have to get 20 falls. Or you don't really have to get 20 falls, but there has to be 20 or 19 falls that take place, and you have to be the last one remaining. That's a gauntlet match. Not, we're going to send out as many people as possible, and the first person to get a fall wins the match. That's stupid. That's absolutely stupid. With that being said, the women's winner, I think, is very, very, I guess not easy to predict, but I think it's easy to predict. I see a lot of Jamie Hayter. I see a lot of Megan Bain in our predictions, but no one's picking who I think is actually going to win, and I think it's going to be Athena. I think Athena comes in. I think Athena wins. Mostly because of who I think is going to win the Women's World Championship. Which I'll just go ahead and give that away. So we'll go ahead and talk about that match real quick. I have a rule when it comes to Mercedes Moné. Until she proves she's going to lose, I'm never going to pick against her. So Mercedes Moné is winning. She will become seven belts Moné because, you know, I guess collecting belts is a cool thing, even though they're fucking props. But and so Athena versus Mercedes is going to be the next big feud. I think they're going to play that back up. I think that's the story, right? I think that's what's happening. I do, 100%. For the men, I think the men are just as fucking easy to predict. I think this is the easiest match to predict. Darby Allin. I think everything, which also, then I guess I can go ahead and give my men's world, the world AEW, is a Texas death match, which means that this is basically their version of Bloodline rules. But I think they're going to be chained together. I think it's how a Texas death match works. I think they're chained by the neck together so they can't really escape each other. I could be wrong. It could just be just the anything goes type thing. Okay, so Texas, that's just going to be like last man standing. Okay. So they may not be chained together. Who knows? I thought that's what they were doing. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Both of them are going to bleed. Someone's probably going to drink blood. It's going to be a stupid spots everywhere. You know you're going to get tacks. You know you're going to get fucking barbed wire. You're going to get fucking stupid shit. But John Moxley's winning. I think this is the most obvious prediction of the night. And anyone buying and spending $50 on this thinking Hangman Page is going to get his comeuppance and win the world title, you will be thoroughly disappointed. And I can't wait to see the breakdown of the IWC when John Moxley retains. Cannot wait for it. Which is why I'm picking Darby to win the men's gauntlet match. Because I think Darby will get his shot in his hometown of Seattle or Tacoma or wherever Wrestle Dream is held. I think Darby's getting the next shot wherever it's going to, whether it's Forbidden Door, wherever the fuck he wants to do it. Darby is the one. The story has been written for Darby and Darby Allin. I agree with a lot of the fans. There's probably 10 or 15 other names on the roster that I would put the title on before Darby Allin. But Darby Allin is who they're giving the belt to. I thoroughly believe that. And so Darby Allin's winning that. So there's my all-in predictions. At the same time all-in's being run, Great American Bash will be running from center stage in Atlanta, Georgia. Georgia. In which we have five matches. We got Javon Evans taking on Jasper Troy. I'm going to go Jasper Troy here. I think they're building Jasper Troy to be this big beast. And I think Jasper Troy wins the match. We have a Falls Count Anywhere for the North American Championship between Ricky Saints and Ethan Page. And what might be the best match of this show? Ricky Saints will be winning that match, getting his comeuppance against Ethan Page. It's a Falls Count Anywhere, which means I'm assuming that the Vanity Project will 100s be getting into the match and getting involved. We have a Women's North American Championship match between the champion Sol Ruka and challenger Issy Dame. Sol Ruka will retain her championship. We have a tag team match between Jordan Grace and Blake Monroe versus Fatal Influence of JC Jane and Fallon Henley. I kind of was hoping that it would be Fallon and Jasmine and JC wouldn't wrestle because she's the champion, but it is what it is. Jordan and Blake Monroe winning this match. I think the story is pretty obvious what's going to happen. This is going to sort of give away an evolution pick, but Jordan's going to win the championship. Blake Monroe is going to befriend her. Get a title or turn on her and get a title opportunity, right? I think that's the story we're running with. And then that's probably going to be the main event. But Oba Femi is taking on Yoshiki Inamura for the NXT Championship match. And unless something miraculous happens, Oba Femi will retain the championship. I think Josh Briggs is going to turn on Yoshiki Inamura. I do. And we'll see. And I think that might be the next big feud going in through the rest of the summer. But that's Great American Bash. That's Great American Bash for you. I think that's going to be a really fun event. I can't wait to watch it tomorrow. And then Sunday night, we cap off the weekend with Evolution. And we got seven matches, unless they make some more tonight, which I don't think they'll do, but we got seven matches. We got a triple threat for the Women's Intercontinental Championship between Becky Lynch, Bayley, and Lyra Valkyria. I'm picking Lyra Valkyria to win this match. My dove. Y'all make fun of her. Y'all call her bird girl. You call her that weird girl. Nah. Lyra Valkyria, my dove, will win this match. And this will set up a Bayley versus Becky feud at SummerSlam. We got a no-holds-barred match between Jade Cargill and Naomi. This is going to be a fun match. I think making it no-holds-barred makes it pretty obvious that Bianca Belair is probably going to get involved. And that means I personally think Jade Cargill will win this match. How Bianca gets involved, I have no idea. She's a wild card in this match. But I do think Jade Cargill will win this match. We have a singles match for the WWE Women's Championship between champion Tiffany Stratton and challenger Trish Stratus. Not a lot of story behind this, other than Trish was like, "Hey, I put you over in February. Can I get a match? Can I get a thank you for that?" Basically, right? Tiffany Stratton's winning this match, and that's all I really got to say about it. There's not much really to go on there. I think that's the case. We then have a battle royal for a world championship match at Clash in Paris. Right? Meaning, it doesn't say for what title. I'm assuming it's just your brand's title. We have, I think, 15 women. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. We have 15 women who have been announced to be participating in this match. I do believe it's 15, if I count it correctly. We have Stephanie Vacher, Ivy Nile, Nia Jax, Nikki Bella, Natalia, Maxine Dupree, Kalani Jordan, Jada Parker, Lola Vice, Lash Legend, Izzy Dame, Tatum Paxley, Zelina Vega, Julia, and Candice LeRae, which leaves about five special entrances. I think these will be legends. I think one will be Michelle McCool. I think one will be Lita. I think one will be Gail Kim. I think she's going to show up. She's been sitting around the Performance Center for a while. Then Gail Kim will be there. I think Soraya's returning. And I think the last entrant in this battle royal will be AJ Lee. I do. 100%. I think it's AJ Lee. I think this is why she hasn't returned before then. I think 100% this will be AJ Lee in this match. With that being said, this match is thoroughly easy to predict. It's Stephanie Vacher. Stephanie Vacher will win this match. She will go on to Paris. She will face either Io Sky or Rhea Ripley. We'll talk about that match here in a second. I think this one's very, very easy. We have a fatal four-way tag team match for the women's tag team championships between Roxanne Perez and Raquel Rodriguez, Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, Sol Ruka and Zarya, and Asuka and Kairi Sane. And I'm picking Sol Ruka and Zarya. I am. Or am I? Yeah, I'm gonna stick to that surprise pick. I'm gonna stick to that pick. I don't see where else. Charlotte and Alexa make no sense to me. Asuka and Kairi, maybe, but not really. It's either gonna be the Judgment Day or Sol Ruka and Zarya. And I think bringing those titles to NXT, one, puts more emphasis on people watching NXT because there's probably gonna be rematches, but two, there's more women that need, like, there's more women down there to create tag teams with, I think it would just be a better benefit to put the women's tag team titles in NXT. Plus, I think with this whole, you know, you know, Ava's been tweeting NXT is going to be all over Evolution. I think they're going to get one of these matches. I don't think, like, the Battle Royal they're going to, right? We then have NXT Women's Championship, a match between JC Jane and versus Jordynne Grace. Jordynne Grace, like I said, will win this match. And then what I think will be the main event will be Io Sky versus Rhea Ripley. And I'm really rethinking my pick live right now. Initially, I was going to pick Io. I think Io would retain. But I'm getting this thought in my mind. And this puts me in a situation where I have to make a pick that I desperately do not want to happen. But just because of two things. We're getting ready to go to France. We've been teasing a lot of Stephanie versus Rhea. We teased it a couple weeks ago on Raw, remember? And we're the October, so that's the September PLE. The October PLE is in Australia. Right? Rhea's going to be a part of that. So, like, my initial idea was, like, have Io win and have Rhea sort of get written off. That's not happening. I'm changing my pick from Io. I'm picking Rhea Ripley. I think Rhea Ripley will go into Paris as champion. Stephanie Vaquer will get the title match there. I think Rhea Ripley leaves Paris as champion and goes into Australia as champion. Sadly, and I'm going to be happy if Rhea wins because it means my predictions were correct. But I am going to be desperately sick to my stomach if Rhea Ripley gets another fucking title. This is one of those things where, like, this is how I'm consistent, right? My predictions are not what I want to happen. They're what I think will happen. That's what predictions are supposed to be, right? And so it's what I think will happen. Logically, with my pick of Stephanie Vaquer winning the Battle Royal, the story, the teasing has been leading towards Stephanie versus Rhea. Now, I could see them putting the title at Paris on Stephanie and then having Rhea try to win it back in Australia. I could see that happening as well. But I'm going Rhea Ripley against all better judgment. I'm going Rhea Ripley. Oh, that's gross. That's gross. Anyways, that is our predictions. Now we're going to go into the Deep Five segment. Which I'm going to be, it's the top thing, there's supposed to be top five things in wrestling that annoy me. But as I started writing things, we got a lot more than five. So these are the things in wrestling that annoy me. Number one, these are in no particular order, right? Number one, waiting for moves or dives to happen. This is typically an indie or AEW thing, but it happens in WWE as well, where like you're outside and everyone gathers for a big group hug waiting for the tope to happen. That's so annoying. Or the people who like sit there crouched waiting for like a kick or something and they're sitting there and it's like pre, you know, it. I like choreographed matches, but when you expose that it's choreographed, it makes it look lame, right? That's part of your job of being a pro wrestler is to, that's actually what kayfabe means. Kayfabe is a worker term, not a fan term. Kayfabe is a term that just means to hide the fact that it's choreographed, right? And so protecting kayfabe is doing everything possible to hide the illusion of wrestling. That's all kayfabe is, right? And a lot of these marks on the internet don't actually know what kayfabe means. But so that's the first thing. Waiting for moves or dives to the outside to happen and just sitting there, right? It's crazy, right? Number two, the European crowds. Cody Rhodes, shut the fuck up. European crowds, whether it's the useless chanting or just the fact that they're just, like I said, useless chanting. Number three, move spamming, especially on destroyers and super kicks. Looking at you, independent scene, AEW. Number four, not protecting finishers, especially in smaller TV matches. Why are people kicking out of finishers? Why are we not protecting finishers anymore, right? Number five, fans who disrespect the Dragunov Gunther banger that took place at NXT UK. That was probably one of the greatest matches of recent history. Please do not disrespect it just because you don't like the superstars in it. But that was some big meaty man slapping me, and the Slapping Me podcast will not be taking hatred towards Gunther versus Dragunov at NXT UK. Number six, Tony Khan. Number seven, hitting a finisher, getting a two count, and then hitting that finisher again to get the three count. Looking at you, Cody Rhodes, this is the dumbest thing ever. Next, street fights that never end up in the street. Next, Sap. Next, bigger name indie wrestlers collecting belts for no reason and never defending them. Looking at you, Mercedes. Next, starting a feud with a big stipulation match and then fans wondering why the hell it loses steam by the time it gets to the third match. Why was Punk and Drew such a good feud that lasted a year? Because the matches started and grew in tension and ended with the Hell in a Cell. I read a report that CM Punk had said in like an interview or something that someone had suggested that the first match be the Hell in a Cell match. And CM Punk basically told him he was an idiot. But yeah, you start small, you end with the big match, right? Next, Dave Meltzer star ratings. Next thing that annoys me, waiting to do your run-in so your music can play. Or, as Bully Ray correctly pointed out, doing your dance while CM Punk is getting beat the shit in the ring, looking at you, Penta. Next, referring to a wrestler's personal life in a promo to get the cheap pop. Looking at you, Tiffany Stratton. Next, women's wrestlers whose entire gimmick is cosplaying as their wrestler in wrestling attire. Because we got a bunch of nerds who aren't athletic and have no idea what the hell they're doing. They have no idea what they're doing. Next, fan chants that are contrary to the story or the match. So, booing the face, cheering the heel. Just in the idea of fan chants, we want tables. No, we don't. And then last, but certainly not least, and probably the biggest annoyance in all of wrestling, Sami Zayn. All right, we'll move on. I'm going to announce the winner of our bracket battle best theme song bracket battle, which is Chris Benoit's Whatever by, is that Union Underground who does that song? No, that's Our Lady Peace. That's Our Lady Peace who does that song. So, congratulations. I kind of expected when I put the bracket together that that was who would win. And then we're going to get into our final thought. Y'all waited so long for this, didn't you? No. Our final thought of the night is going to talk about kayfabe, the style that AEW runs, and why matches don't matter. So this stems from a conversation that me and James had Junkyard James had in the Discord. And I don't necessarily want to talk about this because it's stupid. But first off, like I said, what is kayfabe? Kayfabe is a worker's term to protect the illusion of pro wrestling so that the fans can suspend their disbelief and believe what's happening in the ring. Kayfabe, what is not? Kayfabe is not fans walking around like wrestling is real. That's not kayfabe. So when I say we need to protect kayfabe, what I'm saying is workers need to do their job, is essentially what I'm saying, right? So when I hear fans say kayfabe is dead, no, it's not. Kayfabe is your job. When I hear wrestlers get on the internet and say kayfabe is dead, why can't that? No, kayfabe is your job. Kayfabe isn't, you know, protecting the fact that the person you're wrestling with and you are best friends. That's not kayfabe, right? I'm an adult. I understand that I'm watching a television show. In fact, that's why I'm watching, because it's not real. Because it's a television show, because it's scripted, that's why I'm watching, because I want the entertainment. I want the entertainment. And so I'm not going to sit there and complain because MJF goes and has a cheeseburger with his biggest enemy on TV. I'm not going to be upset with that, right? If Drew McIntyre and CM Punk had a muffin in Chicago, it's not going to irritate me. That's not killing kayfabe. Killing kayfabe happens when you expose the business to, and exposing the business is not protecting the illusion while you're working. It's a worker's term, not a fan term. So that's that. And so this conversation was essentially, it started off with a conversation about Mercedes Moné and how her carrying these championships, and she's got like six of them now, and she's going to win her seventh, and how there's no story in between any of these championships, and how wrestling is story based. That is the fundamentals. There are things that have to take place for pro wrestling to be considered pro wrestling. The industry, from its founding, from the early carnival days, has been story and character based. Promoters in the early days recognized that if I could create characters that invoke emotion, I can sell more tickets. Wrestling has always been about the story. So that is why I critique story, or lack thereof, whether it's Triple H or whether it's Tony Khan. But that's just fake. Like, I'm just going to be frank with you guys. AEW loves to do stories. And they do, when they do them good, they do them pretty damn good. Swerve and Hangman, while I'm not the biggest antic of the fucking drinking the blood, but the storyline behind it, the reason for me to care about that match, it's there. AEW knows how to run WWE style, or what you would call the style, but I just think that's pro wrestling. Like I don't think WWE is doing anything unique that the rest of the history of pro wrestling hasn't done since its founding, and that's create characters and tell stories. Now, when WWE does it the best, they do it the best. They are the top of the game. But when AEW does that, when they do pro wrestling, when they actually tell stories, when they tell stories that make the match meaningful, they do it pretty freaking well. CM Punk versus MJF. Swerve and Hangman's entire story arc is fantastic. Since AEW's founding, Hangman Page has probably been the most consistent character at being a character. So don't sit here and tell me that you're doing something different. No, no. You can't. If you're doing something different than telling me stories, you're not doing pro wrestling. You're doing theater. You're doing Cirque du Soleil. It's a different business. Wrestling from its founding, pro wrestling, the business from its infant days, has always been about characters. It's always been about storytelling. And there are foundations to storytelling that I think not only AEW, but honestly, Triple H has been doing, right? And while I'm on Triple H real quick, I forgot to mention this. I've been harsh on Triple H, especially when it comes to the bloodline. But I got to tell you something. What he's doing right now with the bloodline, absolutely fantastic. Solo Sikoa's fantastic. Jacob Fatu, fantastic. I love what the bloodline's becoming, like this evolution of the bloodline. Right? I think once you got to this point, right, it took a while to get here. That gap period between Roman losing the title and then Roman returning, and I think a lot of it I blamed on Triple H, when I think a lot of it has to do with he had a story and Roman had to take vacation, right? And so I can't fully put that blame on Trips, right? But Triple H struggles at telling stories at times. Look at the current programming right now. Tell me where there's a really good story that Triple H is writing right now. That's his entire job, is to be a producer, right? His entire job as producer is to give me the information needed to understand why the match happening is important. But the Japanese style, the story happens in the ring. Yeah, okay, but there's also things that happen on a week-to-week basis that we're not watching because we don't watch the Japanese style. At least, you know, and this is the conversation between me and James, right? He's like, well, the Japanese style. Big dog. Do you watch every single New Japan show? Do you, right? A lot of the time, the Japanese style, there's factions. All I mean by story, by the way, is the fundamentals of storytelling. Who, what, when, where, why. The most important being why. What are the stakes, right? Why are you fighting? Well, we're faction mates, you don't get along, and or we're faction mates, and he's the leader, but I want to be... Because a lot of New Japan is faction-based. There's like four main factions, and everyone's in a faction, which is what I thought Triple H was going to turn WWE into, but it hasn't happened yet. I think it would actually make creating stories a little bit easier. Make it sort of gang, like, well, this gang attacked my gang, so you're going to fight him. That's a story that I can get behind. And so, now, I'm not saying that you can't tell a story in the match, right? Working the leg, in-ring psychology. Yeah, that stuff is important and actually very important to making the match feel good. But who cares that I'm working the leg if you don't even understand the reason why I'm in the ring in the first place? New Japan tells stories. There's history in the factions and that we just don't see when we watch Wrestle Kingdom. Right? I actually agree with him, that with James, that in-ring psychology and in-ring storytelling is important, but it only becomes important when you get in the ring. Everything leading up to that is also important. I need a purpose as to why you're fighting. What's the stakes? Right? So take, for example, Swerve Ospreay versus Young Bucks. Not the greatest, you know, story, but there's a story there. There's stakes in this match. It matters. Is Ospreay and Swerve going to be barred from challenging for the world title for a year? Or are you going to need to find new EVPs? That's the stakes. I can get behind that match. There's a reason for that match to matter. Right? There's a reason for that match to matter. There's stakes. That's all I mean by storytelling. I don't need this to be, you know, Marvel Studios level storytelling. I just need to know why you're fighting on a week-to-week basis, right? And match, you should have very limited amount of matches on your television show, your week-to-week show. That week-to-week show should be the place where you tell me why these things that are happening at the pay-per-view are happening. Not where you can get, you know, four people in a ring to see who wins $400,000 that isn't actually real money, it's just kayfabe. It's stupid. Right? It's stupid. Let's put the same 17 people in the ring together and have a 16 person tag team match just for the hell of it. We're going to do it 14 weeks in a row. And right, and there's no story to it. Right? That's what I'm talking about. Anytime you have a match, there has to be stakes. Something has to happen or else people aren't going to care about it. And that's all that I was saying. That's all that I was saying. I'm not hating AEW. I'm not hating on anybody's style. All I'm saying is from the foundation of wrestling, the business was founded on one principle, and that is storytelling. Now, how you tell a story and what type of stories you tell have evolved over time, but you still need to tell a story. Stories are what make the business. Wrestling is more about stories and less about athletics. If you just want to watch people flip around the ring, go watch the circus. And with that, thank you all for listening to the Slapping Mead Wrestling Podcast. I am Way Too Deep. Going forward, we got one more episode in the month of July. It'll be next Friday when we do a Slammiversary prediction. I wasn't going to do this initially, but Slammiversary looks like it's going to be a very good show. So we'll do a Slammiversary prediction show next Friday. Then we will continue. We will take a break for the rest of the month of July and come back August the 1st to predict SummerSlam and talk about all the fun things we have missed. So next Friday, we'll talk about, you know, the shows that are happening this weekend and then predict Slammiversary. And then, We'll take that little break till August 1st, and then we'll jump right back into it. August 1st, remember, we are starting brand new Bracket Battle. Prepare for that. But until then, thank you all for listening. And I will see you next Friday. Thank you all for listening. Like, share, subscribe. And until then, I'll see you on the next one.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, Slapping Mead Wrestling every Tuesday.